we are often viewed as neurotypicals with a disorder that needs to be fixed. But it's not like that. We just have a very different brain that works in a different way and needs completely different solutions, different approach. So it's not that there is a gap that something is missing and you just fill it. It's just you need like a whole new system and a whole new strategy.
Are you ready to reclaim your life from exhaustion and expand the possibilities of what life can be? If so, I'm your guide, Emma Pacitti, work-life geek and engineer-turned-resiliency coach on a mission to redefine how we work, live, and utilize our energy. Each episode, I dig deep with my guests as they share their story, spark, and strategies for developing our own unique work-life blend. This is Engineering Serenity. Episode 16, Neurodivergent Well-Being with Paula Loeb.
Hi.
Hi. In order for the audience to get to know you a little better, I'd like to ask you a few basic questions. First off, what is your full name and pronouns?
So my name is Paula Loeb and my pronouns are she, her.
What is your age-ish?
I am in my mid-30s, or should I say late-30s, around there.
That abyss between 30 and 40 that no one remembers.
Yeah.
What industry do you work in?
I'm a burnout expert for neurodivergent women.
Nice. How many hours do you typically work per week?
I don't actually know. I should probably track this. I plan to.
Like 20, 40, 60? Do you have a range?
I think there is a range. I think when I'm in like my good weeks, I work close to 40. When I'm in my more restful weeks, I probably work something between 10 and 20. And it kind of varies with everything in between.
Ah, that's nice to see that there's a variation in the way that you flow based on your energy levels and things. Do you like your career?
Yes, I do. It's my special interest and my expertise and my hobby and my everything.
Special interest. I think that's a really good way to think about your career.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 5, how would you describe your current work-life blend? Where 1 is it could get better and 5 is I'm really knocking it out of the ballpark.
I think it's close to 5, actually. It's even more like I'm thinking I've become too lazy and I need to do more work and a bit less life.
That's an interesting instinct. Do you feel like, where does the instinct to feel like you need more work comes from?
That's a good question. That's something I need to coach myself on because obviously it's really great to have a good amount of life. But I feel like I see that there are clients and people who need more of my services and I need like time and space to create it. And sometimes I just don't want to.
So it's really coming from a place of interest as well.
Yeah.
That you can step into.
Yes.
It's not coming from a place of you of lack.
Yes, exactly. It's not like I feel I have to or I need to. I see there is a need. I know I can do it. I know I would enjoy it. But at the moment, it's summertime and I let myself go a bit and I let myself enjoy more outdoors, enjoy more time with friends. And I have piling up list of things that I'd like to do or I should do or I want to do.
All of our favorite words.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you located in the world?
That is a tough question. I used to be in London for many years, and now I'm trying to find another location that is not a city. And yeah, I'm kind of moving around. At the moment, I'm in Lithuania for the summer. In winter, I'd like to try somewhere warmer. The winter before I was in Spain, the winter before I was in Mexico. And yeah, so it's not stable at the moment.
What culture were you raised in?
I would say it's a blend of Lithuania and London.
Nice. Describe your household.
It's ever-changing. I am usually on my own, but I sometimes live with people, with family, with friends, whoever has a nice space where I would like to be. Then I'm with those people for a month or two, and sometimes I'm alone again.
this constant movement, I'm picking up a theme. Is that something that's natural for you?
I think yes and no. I think I am autistic and ADHD, and I think a lot of us who are in this boat, we know that we crave comfort and safety, but then we crave adventure. So it's swinging between those two. And at the moment, I am enjoying movement, but I also kind of miss having a stable place. Yes. It's a bit of both.
Do you have any hobbies?
Oh, yeah, of course, I have plenty. A lot of my hobbies actually have been harnessed into the business. So anything to do with mindfulness, meditation, breath work, mental health, I have a lot of interest around those areas. So I like to read a lot about that and neuroscience. And I have done a lot of certifications and studies around those areas. And now I apply all that in my business. And outside my business, what I love to do is I love to be in the wilderness, nature, swimming or hiking or camping, or just, you know, even reading a book or enjoying time with friends somewhere outdoors.
Lovely. Lovely. Yeah, you could really feel that blend of your interests and your work and your hobbies. I can see why you feel like your work-life blend is already at a 5. You could hear that just the way you describe how you work and what you do.
Thank you.
So you said that you work with the neurodivergent community.
Yes.
What got you into that space? Why there?
Because I'm neurodivergent myself. And there's a whole story, of course, that I had my own burnout. I had my own journey through that. And I've noticed that there isn't really a solution for us. The whole neurodivergent wellness industries is at its infancy, and medical industry, mental health industry, mindfulness industry, wellness industry, they are all made by neurotypicals for neurotypicals, and the solutions don't work for us, or maybe they work a little bit, but they don't really solve the whole problem of burnout. So when I found the solution for myself after many years of research, trial and error, I thought like it would be unfair to keep it for myself. I wanted to share with other people because I know they need it, they can use it, and they don't have to struggle like I did.
So what do you see is the difference in burnout for a neurodivergent individual versus a neurotypical?
I think for neurodivergent, we just have more layers to it, more aspects to it. Neurotypical people, they typically have a bit less to deal with. For neurodivergent person, it can be it's too noisy, so then we get too tired and then we go into shutdown, and that contributes to us having no energy on top of everything else that's going on. I don't know, too much work and toxic bosses and dysregulated nervous system. While for a neurotypical person in the same situation, they might have a bit of difficult time with too much work or too much stress, but then for them it's enough to rest a bit more or maybe to put some boundaries in at work, and then they're fine. For a neurotypical person, they usually try to do a few of those things and or rest more, but then they see that it doesn't really cut that deep. Like it might help a little, but doesn't really solve the whole problem because there's actually so much more that's going on for us.
So you mentioned that burnout support is really in its infancy for the neurodivergent community.
Yeah.
Where do you feel like your work is coming to fill that gap in the current approaches you see in the wellness advice that's built primarily for the neurotypical mind?
I wouldn't say it's as much as a gap that they need to do anything extra. It's just that we are often viewed as neurotypicals with a disorder that needs to be fixed. But it's not like that. We just have a very different brain that works in a different way and needs completely different solutions, different approach. So it's not that there is a gap that something is missing and you just fill it. It's just you need like a whole new system and a whole new strategy.
Yeah, that's the gap. That conversation and that strategy for the neurodivergent community seems to be missing.
Yes, exactly.
So where do you even start in this process? Because that seems like just a giant space.
Yes. When I work with clients, I usually apply like a 3-step strategy. So the first step is getting some relief. The second step is working with the root causes. And the third step is combining everything and building resilience and prevention. I don't know, maybe it would be useful for people to, if I can share a link to my three-step strategy guide, people can read it for themselves and get something to take away from this episode, somewhere to look at. So maybe I'll share that. Maybe that would be, I think, easier for people.
That's fine.
Okay.
Is there anything that you found surprising in your journey?
So many things. I think one was, of course, like for many of us, realizing that I was autistic and then realizing I was ADHD. So I think that was really a big surprise, like for many of us. Trying to think, of course, there's going to be many other surprises. It's just, I think also realizing how much is really involved in being well. It can be a bit daunting, but also it doesn't have to be that there are simple steps and strategies that can get you through it. But it's just, realizing that again and again, that there is another thing and another thing that comes up when in your journey to wellness.
So when you started your journey into wellness, you were unaware of your neurodivergence?
Yes. Yeah, so for me, it was, I would say there's two different times that I went into wellness. One is as a teenager when I started the whole mindfulness journey and I started meditating and yoga and on all these different things. And then I studied psychology and et cetera. So it was one start was getting started on this whole thing. It was more of a hobby. And then another start was when I realized, I think it was maybe mid or late 20s, when I'm doing so much, but it's not really bringing me actual wellness and I'm not actually thriving as I would like to. So that was like, then I started a much deeper journey into wellness.
Okay, so this is really interesting. So at 15, you started exploring the ideas of mindfulness and you started studying therapy, you mentioned.
Psychology. I did a degree
in psychology.
Yeah. When I...
So you did your degree in psychology. What prompted that initial exploration into mindfulness? I feel like that's not something you really start bubbling into usually as a typical 15-year-old.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't really know. I think for me, I always had this, it always attracted me, all these like more mystical things. Like back in the day, like this was 20 years ago. Now everyone knows what meditation is. Everyone probably tried it. Back then, it was something very mystical, very alternative, something very rare. And I just found it fascinating. It was really attracting me. It was really, I couldn't really tell anyone I'm doing it because I knew people might look weird at it and might not. Some of my family were really worried that I'm getting into some cult or sect or something is going to go really bad. It was something that was very, I don't know, alternative or different for me, but I was just attracted to all those mystical things. Back then I didn't know what it was about, but now I can see that it was really that deep-rooted special interest in wellness and mindfulness in human mental health of different types of expressions of it as well.
So it's interesting that you went from this genuine interest in mindfulness and exploring these alternative practices, getting your degree in psychology, and you have all these tools at hand, yet you feel like they didn't have an impact?
Yeah, I could see that it helped a little bit. I could see that it was like giving some result, making a little bit of difference. But then I realized, man, I'm doing this over 10 years and I'm so burnt out and I am always on the brink of depression or anxiety. What's going on? Like I have a degree in psychology. I had already then a degree also in yoga philosophy. So I've had such a vast knowledge of science and mindfulness and yoga and all these practices I've been doing and all these other things I've tried. And it was just not really cutting it for me.
So what was the answer? Like you're having this aha moment that I have all of this knowledge at my fingertips to, in theory, be living this sort of relaxed, well-blended, but you're still struggling with the depression symptoms, the burnout symptoms. Yeah. Then what?
Yeah, so this is when I thought, you know what? Because what was happening to me is that, you know, when I talked to other people, everyone would say, oh yeah, we all get tired sometimes, just rest a bit. That's just life. It can be tough sometimes. Don't be so sensitive. All the things that people do.
I'm laughing out of, oh, I've heard that more than 100 times.
Yeah. So I always used to believe that. But at one point I thought, you know what? I don't care anymore if this is what is normal, if this is what everyone goes through. I just don't want to live a life like this anymore. So I want to look for ways to live differently. And at that point, I was just like, I didn't know if it's possible, how, or how it would look like, how I would find it. But I just had this like really strong inner resolve that I'm done with that and I'm gonna do different. And that's when I went into this very long and deep journey of researching much deeper, like reading so many more articles and books and trying practices. And most importantly, like being really, I would say, having that radical honesty and radical self-awareness to really understand what is at the root. Because I think a lot of people do these things on a surface level, and a lot of people just try a little bit and, oh, it just doesn't feel that nice, or it doesn't bring results as quickly, and they put it aside. But I went much deeper, and what I would find, like sometimes I would find like a deeper root cause of burnout or a deeper layer of wellness. And then I would think, oh, I found an answer. But actually, then I burn out again. So then there is another layer and another aspect and another thing I would find. So it took me, I think, around 5 years in total trying to find all the different aspects and all the different layers until I found, I hope, them all. And then I was able to actually fully recover and never go back to burnout. And now thriving, I don't know, 3-4 years, I think, before it wasn't possible to be well more than, I don't know, 2-5 months.
Can you give a little more detail about these layers?
Sure. So there are many different things there. I'll name a few. So for example, one is what I would call neurotype. So firstly, you might understand that you are autistic or might be autistic or ADHD or highly sensitive. So that's a first step, but that's a very gross level. It's a very kind of wide level. And then you need to go much more deeper and much more exact of what exactly it means to you, how exactly it looks like for you, where your energy comes from, where it goes, what are the little things that drain you, what are the little sensitivities or triggers or glimmers or things like auditory processing disorder. And you need to get like the whole picture of how it looks like for you and how to work with that. So that's a neurotype. Then there is nervous system regulation. Probably a lot of people know that already, that we all have a lot of stressors in life that we might not be able to avoid. But if we have the skills and habits to regulate our nervous system and switch off the stress response, we can be calmer throughout the day and we can get more of our energy back without actually changing any of our environment. Then I mentioned a bit about energy cycles and where our energy comes from, where it goes. So it's related to neurotype, but it's like another aspect. Then there is emotional regulation. Some people, some neurodivergent people have very high emotions and very strong emotions that, again, dysregulate their nervous system. And then other neurodivergent people have something like alexithymia, where they don't recognize their emotions and they don't realize that they have them even. So both of these extremities actually cause problems in the long term, and we need ways to work with them. Then there is limiting beliefs, fears, mindset, so many other things. But like I mentioned a few, I think people can get an idea of what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, but I can see how you would go through the process of learning in your own experience, and then be like, oh, now I'm aware of my neurodivergence. Mm. This will be a solution. Okay, no, this is just another layer. And then how does that impact my energy levels? How does that impact that? Energy management is a big theme in my own life and my own work that I think is really key. For me, that's the key metric to pay attention to. How do you see that in your work?
Yeah, I think it's a really big one. Obviously, when we talk about burnout, energy levels is a very big one. So yes, understanding where your energy comes from, where it goes, is one of the key components, and also planning your energy, understanding, okay, this is how my week or my day looks like, and these are like non-negotiable parts, and then there are other parts we can move around a little bit, and then there are, we all always I recommend to put in rest, to schedule rest, or to add padding to things before and after. For example, if I have a birthday party on Thursday that I absolutely have to attend, because, for example, like my one of my best friends that I really went to, you know. So I also have to say, you don't actually have to do those things if you don't want to. These are friends, they will understand. But then again, like if there is a social event that I have to attend or want to attend, then I know that, okay, on Thursday, if I'm doing that on Thursday evening, I would probably do not want to have any meetings on Thursday, or maybe I'll just make sure that they are in the morning. So then in the afternoon, I have time to come back to myself. And then again, Friday morning, I would probably have no meetings. So probably most of Friday, I will make sure it's blocked off, that there are no meetings. And this might look different for different people. Maybe in your job, you don't have meetings. Maybe in your job, you have like different types of things, or maybe you don't have a job. Maybe you are like a stay-at-home parent, or so it just looks different for every person. But it's just like being aware what is happening and how I can take care of myself. But then also what comes here is confidence to do that, because if we have low confidence, low self-worth, then we will be more prone to try and please other people, to not put boundaries and try to do everything. And even knowing about the energy management does not help, because you cannot implement that, because you do not have the confidence to do that. You have like other things getting in the way of you taking care of yourself. This is how like all the layers interlock like that.
Do you see that it's only a confidence issue? Because I can also see a hesitation that people might have of, I would love to take the whole afternoon off to replenish my energy levels and reduce my social engagements before I have to attend an evening event. But I work a 9-to-5. Mm-hmm. I don't have that flexibility in my agenda to control that. What advice would you give to that conversation?
Yeah, so I used to work in corporate myself, so I know I can't just take the time off any time, but I would make sure I block my calendar then, that people don't book meetings, and I can just do, I used to do programming, I would program databases and automate data. This is something that I actually enjoyed in my work, and I would just block the time off so I can just do that, which would bring me a lot of satisfaction. But even if you do a 9-to-5 job, like we do have various amounts of freedom or flexibility in our jobs. Sometimes we might be able to control what we do when. Sometimes we might be able to push our meetings around. Sometimes we might be able to ask for accommodations. Maybe if you work, say, I don't know, at a restaurant or at a shop, maybe you can ask to do half a shift in a warehouse or at the back with a cutlery rather than in the front. You know, it depends on the job you do, on your environment and how it looks like for you. But I think for a neurodivergent person to thrive, you need to find a job that accommodates your needs to some extent. I know it's not possible for a lot of us to have a job where we control everything. And I used to work at those jobs myself. I used to work with kids for a while as well, and it was very draining. But there's always a way to arrange things to make it easier for yourself.
So what do you think was the biggest shifts that you made in terms of designing your life between before you started doing the layered work and where you are now, where you're thriving?
Yes, of course, one of the big shifts was understanding that I am neurodivergent, which I think for a lot of people is a big answer. But then again, it was a big relief, but then it was like, okay, so what do I do with that? So then it's all that neurotype thing. It's all that information that is disorganized somewhere floating around the internet, and people have to do a lot of research and reading and trial and error to find it. So I made it all organized and systematized for you guys.
Your identification of your neurodivergence, is that something that you were formally diagnosed and you went through a formal process, or was it a self-diagnosis? Can you tell a little bit about how you became aware of your neurodivergence?
So I think I was like very much into my wellness research and trying to understand things. And I read somewhere, there was like, I think a wellness coach somewhere writing about female autistic phenotype and how she just realized that she was autistic. And I was like, what is the female autistic phenotype? I studied psychology, but I did not remember hearing the female autistic phenotype. So I started researching that. And then it was like, yeah, that sounds like me.
What is a female autistic phenotype?
So
I don't know it either.
Sure. Autism looks different in men and in women.
Okay.
And the way the science describes it nowadays, it's mostly expressed like that in men. And in women, it looks different. So this is what it's called, the female autistic phenotype. It's just that how autism is expressed in women and how it's different from the standard medical definition or outlook, and how it's harder to spot it because it looks different from the standard medical definition.
Can you give some examples of the differences?
Sure. So it could be that women look more social. It's not necessarily that they have better social skills or that they are more wanting to socialize. It's just that they've been raised in a way to be pleasing to others. So they appear more social, but actually they are suffering on the inside because socializing can be difficult for us. If we have to force ourselves to do eye contact, if we have to force ourselves to mask, to pretend that we're not bothered by sounds or lights or whatever, we still are very bothered. It's the same autism for us, but we just mask more. Or another thing is the interest are sometimes not recognized. So, you know, if a boy is very interested in trains and know everything about the trains in the 40s, then it's a clear sign. But if a girl knows everything about Spice Girls, including which hospital each member was born at, nobody looks at it in a way that is, oh, it's just like a girl is into Spice Girls.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that intense interest is also...
Yes. The basic thing is like they are all the same, but it's just that our society is trying to look at girls in a way that, oh, this is just like a girl thing, you know?
Okay.
Or also girls are raised to appear more social and more pleasing to others. For example, a boy, if an environment is too loud for him, he would go away or cover his ears, and he'd be encouraged to stand up for himself and to, you know, cater his needs. But a girl would be encouraged to just be patient and wait a bit and don't make a scene. So their experience might be exactly the same, being autistic, but just the way they are raised is making women appear, I'm doing air quotes, less autistic, but actually like they are just exactly the same. It's just that they've been socialized in a way to, or pressured by society to mask more.
Okay. Interesting. And in your practice, you primarily work with women neurodivergent, correct?
Yes, exactly. I do sometimes have now some male clients come to me and I help them if I see that I can, but majority of my clients are women.
Is there a reason that you decided to work more with women?
Yes. So I'm a woman myself, and I've noticed that there are some intricacies that are different for autistic women, and added layers as well. So women are more prone to burnout. And again, there are more reasons for them and there are more layers for them. So as I just explained, that the female socialization, socialized in a way to please others, or living in a patriarchal society where we're more at risk to be discriminated, etc. Yeah, there's just more things for women to deal with. This is why I catered my solutions to solve those issues for them more effectively. And of course, if I help men, then they don't need that extra work. There's a few other things that we look at, but the majority of my work is still for both.
Okay. Interesting. So for someone who are aware they're neurodivergent or just have an inkling, and they're a little concerned about their mental health, where is a good place they could start? Can you give a little mini experiment?
If someone thinks they are neurodivergent, or they might be neurodivergent.
And maybe they're struggling with their mental health or depression or feel like they're on the edge of burnout. Mm. What's the first place you could start?
Yeah, so that's a lot of things, which of course is quite common to be feeling all of that. I would say there's just two different things. One is if you think you might be neurodivergent and you want to explore that, this one route for you to do. And if you are on the verge of burnout and wanting help, this is slightly different.
Okay.
Okay, I'll answer the first one. So if you think you might be neurodivergent, I would say that you already have done the most important thing. It's realizing that you might be different, that your needs might be different, that your experience might be different, that you might have more difficulties in life than other people do. So if this is what you feel, all I want you to know is that what you are feeling is valid. Mm. What you are experiencing is real. If you decide to go for a diagnosis and this is accessible for you and this would help you, you can go for it. If you are not sure if you want to go for a diagnosis, if it's not accessible for you, you know, in some countries it's long waiting lists, in some places it's expensive, in some places also you can maybe find an evaluation, but the person who's doing the evaluation might not be well qualified to notice the neurodivergence in women or in highly intelligent people. So even if some people are able to access the evaluation, they don't get the accurate one and they've been told that, you know, they're inventing things, etc. So whichever it happens to be your scenario, I want you to know that you do not need to hinge a validation on a diagnosis. What you're feeling is valid. What you're experiencing is real, and you have every right to have your needs met. You have every right to be taken seriously, be it at workplace, in family environments, in relationships. I would say just focus on learning how to communicate your needs, saying things like, this is too loud for me here, I will leave, or I'm feeling tired now, I'll go lie down. So you don't have to explain to people that, oh, look, I might be autistic, so this means that, and this means that, and then this means I need this. People not necessarily need to know that. And if you want to, you can share that, absolutely. But all I want to say is that you don't need anyone to tell you that, okay, you are autistic, so you're allowed to feel the way you feel, and you're allowed to ask for adjustments or to ask for your needs to be met. So I would say, like, the first and foremost thing, the most important thing is to recognize the different needs that you have and just communicate them and try to get them met. That's the most important thing, especially if you are close to burnout. This is what you need to focus on. If going for a diagnosis helps you, then you can do that. This was my case. I was really in a bad, vulnerable place, and I went for a diagnosis because I wanted that validation. But later I realized that actually nobody has that power to tell me what I'm allowed to feel. Like, only I have the power to tell myself what I'm allowed to feel and what my needs are. If you want that validation of a diagnosis, that's absolutely valid. If you want, you can go for it. But I just want you to know that you do not have to wait for it to give yourself permission to feel what you feel and to ask for your needs to be met. So that's a long-winded answer, but that's like the one part of if you feel like you might be neurodivergent, this is the advice I have for you. And I also want to know that actually neurodivergent community is very open, tolerant, and acceptive of self-diagnosis. So if you feel like this is what you identify with, then you are very welcome to join any communities, groups. I myself have a group on Facebook called Neurodivergent Mindfulness. So if you want to join that, you are welcome without a diagnosis. And a lot of groups are like that, where you find belonging, where you find advice, support. You are welcome to be in the communities and the space without the diagnosis. Okay. And the second part of the question was, if you feel like you might be burnt out, if you feel you might be or not sure if you're burnt out or not. So I would say the good first step is talk to somebody who you trust and who you know is going to be kind and empathetic, who's not going to tell you something like, oh, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, you just power through and pat on the back and, you know, things like that. Talk to someone who you can trust, who you know is going to be kind. Maybe it's a friend, a neighbor, a colleague, a therapist, a coach. I myself offer free consults. So if you've been resonating with what I've been talking about, you're very welcome to book a free consult with myself. I'll hear you out. I'll see your situation and I'll help you find the next steps. So yes, this is the advice I have if you are feeling a bit burnt out or not sure where you are. So that's also, yeah, if you are not sure where you are, this is an indication that there's probably something going on. Like people who are well, they don't have those questions.
Yeah. Interesting. People who are well don't have those questions. Do you find that to be true in your own life?
Yeah. Yeah. When I'm well, I don't have questions. So maybe if something is wrong, or like if I start having those questions, that means that something is going on. Maybe not something serious. Maybe this is just something quite small and sometimes funny even, but if I start asking these questions, that means like there is something there that is making me ask those questions.
Yeah, that's a really interesting awareness monitor.
Thank you.
It's clearly there, but I hadn't quite framed it that way. Interesting.
Thank you.
But all of these actions, I think in many ways, it comes back to what you were saying about confidence, needing that confidence to take the steps, set the boundaries, to say your needs, to ask the questions and to find the empathy when you're not, and to ask those questions out loud.
Yes, absolutely.
Do you have any suggestions of where to start to find that confidence?
Yes, I have a very good one, I would think. So, yeah. Okay, you can be the judge of that. But for me, it helped a lot. And I know a lot of people who it helped. So there is no such thing as lack of confidence. You are either confident in yourself, or you are confident in a fear, or you are confident in something someone told you. So you need to see where you have placed that confidence, understand why you have done that, and place it somewhere you want it to be. It's a simple process. It's not easy or fast, but the concept is quite simple. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really elegant way to say the confidence is always there. It's just, where have I placed my confidence and what actions is that driving me towards? Mm. Yeah. Interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you. You really got me thinking about how do we find our confidence? How do we start to think about how our own mind works? And then designing and then finding those boundaries in those places to be aware of that and then really suiting it to our lives and our energy to the way that our life works. Yeah. You've really got me thinking. If people want to learn more about you, where can they find you?
So I hang out a lot on Instagram at paola.mindfulness. So you can find me there. And you can also check out my website, paola-mindfulness.com. I have a lot of free resources there and also like all the information, what to do next, free consults, etc.
Oh, thank you. And with that, I would love to wrap up today's conversation with the final 5 questions I ask all of my guests.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Sure.
What is your definition of serenity?
Serenity. Oh, that's a big one. I think it's just, for me, it's about allowing myself to experience that and understanding that life will never be perfect. There's always going to be something where I'll be thinking, oh, as soon as I get this, as soon as I finish that, as soon as this happens. But There's always things like that. So if you always postpone it, it's never there. But for me, I find serenity in the moments where I allow myself to have these moments where I just say, yes, there's going to be things in the future, but let's just find something now, something I can be kind to myself about. I can be grateful, or I can be, when you're burnt out, you can't really feel gratitude because that's, your brain chemistry is different, but I digress. So it's just asking myself, okay, what can I do today to make myself happy in this moment, to enjoy this moment to the full, and allowing myself to do that despite the fact that the sink is full of dishes and there's laundry and there is this and there is, you know, better tomorrow after I move to a new place, etc. Just like being here and now, as cheesy as it sounds.
No. Thank you.
You're welcome.
If you could master one skill instantly, what would it be?
Oh, gosh, I really like your questions. They're so deep. What skill? Actually, at the moment, I am really learning about marketing. So at this point in time, I would say marketing is the one skill I'd like to understand. But yeah, it's just more about my business and in life or in general in the future. It might be something else entirely.
What is your favorite method to recharge during the workday?
Passive rest. Lie down under covers. Maybe listen to some peaceful music. For me, this is the absolute must. And I think a lot of autistic people in particular, we need that passive rest when we're not doing anything at all.
What's the difference between passive rest and active rest?
Active rest is when you're doing something active. It can be having a walk, drawing, anything at all, really. Some people I enjoy cooking, but it comes after passive rest. I always need to have a good amount of passive rest, and then I can do something a bit more active. Even for me, even reading a book is active because I need to use my brain.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Where does reading sit in that scale of active to passive?
Yeah, it also depends what I'm reading, because some really light fiction might be close to passive rest, just like watching some really light TV might be passive rest. But if it's something a bit more interesting or is something non-fiction, then yeah, it's not passive rest.
Interesting. Thank you. What are you geeking out about right now?
What I'm geeking out about right now. Oh, there's always so many things. I think for now is herbs, because it's summer season and so many herbs are in bloom in the wild nature. And I'm just trying to learn all the herbs and all their properties and make sure I get the ones that I want the most. Right now, it's so simple, but actually it can be really effective. Sometimes just making myself a tea of herbs I have collected, it just brings me such peace of mind and pleasure. Such a simple thing, but yeah.
Lovely. So you have already mentioned that your work-life blend is at a 5 right now. Can you describe a typical day?
Yeah, so actually I can describe today even. Because it's a perfect example. So, you know, it's summertime. I am actually giving talks about burnout at a lot of festivals, which I enjoy because I like being outdoors. I like all those mindfulness spaces where people do all these things about wellness. And it also is great for my business because I get more reach. I get more people, more followers, more audience. So I absolutely love it. But I do that on the weekends and it feels like rest. But then I come back to home during the week where I'm supposed to work, but I feel, you know what, I've been so tired because of those festivals. And sometimes it's like, even, you know, it can be amazing things like sitting around the fire and with guitar and singing some songs. It's amazing, but then you realize that you're missing out on sleep. So today I woke up at 10 a.m which is very unusual for me, but I allow myself to do that and not feel guilty about it. And then I exercised. I made my morning smoothie. I had some cacao. And then I worked, I think, from around 12 until 4. I'm doing some work. And then, so it's only 4 hours of work. And then I am driving to see my friend out of, it's a bit outside of town. So it's going to be in a forest. We're going to be, I don't know, chatting and swimming in the lake probably. And I'll come back in the evening and I don't know what I'll do. Maybe I'll read a book. Maybe I just go to bed. But this is how my day is looking.
How variable are your days?
They are very variable. As a woman, I allow myself to live with my hormonal cycle. So when I'm bleeding and during my PMS, when my energy is lower, I really allow myself to rest more, to sleep more, to have less meetings. And then during my follicular stage and ovulation, when I have estrogen is rising high, it's giving me more energy, more focus. I really do the bigger part of my work, my tasks, my strategies, all the creation things. So yeah, it really varies up and down a lot for me.
Do you actively put that into your schedule?
Yes, I do. I do actively put that into my schedule. I usually plan my month in advance and I plan it according to where I'll be in my cycle and I plan those tasks around that. I leave a little bit of flexibility because as women, you can't exactly know when exactly things are going to happen in your body. It's like there might be a day or two here and there. But yeah, I'm fairly regular, so I can plan more or less according with some flexibility to push things around when things happen.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for sharing a bit of your journey on discovering the multiple levels of healing and understanding, sharing your advice about confidence and awareness and just being, yeah, taking ownership of the way that your mind works and taking action onto that. Is there one thing you'd like to leave the audience with today?
Yes. Yes. I'd like to say that if you're burnt out, know that it's not your fault. We've been raised in a way to, you know, we haven't been equipped with skills and habits to take care of our wellness. We haven't been able to necessarily do the things that we need or have to do for our wellness. So if you're burnt out, it's not your fault, but it's in your power and it does get better.
Intrigued or inspired by today's episode, but forgot the details? Don't worry, I've got you covered. Visit engineeringserenity.com for a complete summary of today's episode, including timestamps, links, and other resources for your adventure. Wishing you strength and serenity, Evelyn out.